an eye-popping revenue forecast, another hours-long hearing on House Republicans' vaccine mandate bill, plus crime bills and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 17th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller, a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana is set to collect $3 billion more in the current budget than state fiscal leaders planned for, according to a new revenue forecast unveiled Thursday. Yet House and Senate Republicans remain at an impasse over how to spend that money in the upcoming legislative session. The new forecast projects Indiana will end the next two fiscal years with unprecedented budget reserves, $5.1 billion and $4 billion, respectively. House Republican fiscal leader Tim Brown says his caucus will continue to push hard in the 2022 session for tax cuts.
This revenue forecast, I think, supports our position. We look forward to how citizens have worked hard and deserve a break.
Senate GOP fiscal leader Ryan Mishler, however, preaches caution. He notes that lawmakers already created provisions in state law that will likely send $2.5 billion to pay down a teacher pension fund next year and potentially trigger another automatic taxpayer refund in 2023.
So I think we're in a good position, and then come next December, we have the next forecast and we're putting our budget together, you might see some more programs that we can do.
Neither Mishler nor Brown anticipate the state spending more money on government programs in the 2022 session, which is what State House Democrats are calling for, including support for health care, teacher pay, and student loan debt. Can Senate Republicans hold off the House GOP's push for tax cuts in 2022? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike O'Brien. John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers. And Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, can Senate Republicans afford to preach caution with a projected $5.1 billion in the bank at the end of the current fiscal year?
You know, they have supermajorities in both. They can do whatever the heck they want to do, frankly. I just wish they weren't just a one-trick pony. I mean, either it's hold the money or tax cuts. I mean, we have one of the unhealthiest populations in the country in terms of obesity and diabetes. We're not doing anything about that. Our city streets are a disgrace. We're not doing anything about that. School, higher education is too expensive. We're not doing anything about that. And we're still not paying our teachers enough to lure people into teaching, particularly in special education. I wish, and what about preschool? I mean, there's so many ways we could invest in the future when we have a windfall like this, and instead they freeze. They don't know what to do because, frankly, they're devoid of ideas. The only idea they ever have is cut taxes. And when a recession comes, oh, my goodness, God forbid they should raise taxes. Oh, no, 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 no. You just cut out the programs that help people that are most adversely affected by recessions. So it's disheartening to see that amount of money, which could do so much good for the future and make this such a better place for everybody, and they won't do it.
Mike O'Brien, it seems like Republicans at the State House in the legislature right now are proposing two ideas for 2022 with all of this money: permanent tax cuts or paying down debt in the short term. Are those really the only options?
No, they're not. And I think what you saw at the end of the last session was a willingness for State House Republicans to spend what was the last windfall that we had, not all of it, because they are going to, it's still Indiana. We're still going to be cautious and not set ourselves up for, you know, failure if these revenues don't materialize, if inflation doesn't last as long as the next 2 years as it's estimated to last, which of course is a benefit to the government. When prices are higher, you're going to see an increase in tax revenue. If inflation's shorter run than what's being anticipated, some of these revenues may not totally be realized. But this idea that like they're just sitting on a pile of money is untrue. They did try. They only had about a week to do it once the revenue forecast came out in April to spend about $1.9 billion in a portion of that new revenue. And the vast majority of it went to K-12. And all we've seen this year, our school districts renegotiate contracts with teachers to pay them more, to hit that baseline $45,000 minimum salary for teachers statewide. So they're doing all those things. I think as you put another $3 billion in the mix, you might have the opportunity for the House and Senate Republicans, who aren't really, their only disagreement is on timing, really. And making sure that there's some reliability on these revenues. It's not that they're having some like fundamental ideological disagreement on whether or not to reduce taxes or alter the taxpayer refund or these other things. It's just a matter of prudence and timing on if we're going to spend more money, at what point are we reasonably sure that this incredible, insane increase in tax revenue is sustainable.
John Schwanes, to that point about timing, Mike's absolutely right. Senate Republicans aren't saying we're never going to cut taxes. They're saying let's hold off until the 2023 session when we write a new state budget and have a better sense of long-term, revenues to have that conversation. But with all this money projected to come in and with half of the Senate up for re-election in next year, can they afford to hold off when it comes to the voters?
The election issue is a very potent and very real factor in this, Brandon. You're exactly right. And that might push some lawmakers who are up for re-election to go with some sort of tax increase, when in fact they might usually wait until the next budget is written. But it's, it's caution doesn't seem to reign supreme at this point. Although forecasts can be wrong. A few weeks ago on the show, I pointed out that the State Budget Committee back in summer of 2020 projected a $3 billion deficit for the biennium at that point. So $3 billion deficit. Now we have a projection of a $3 billion windfall. That's a pretty big pendulum swing. A pandemic notwithstanding, and we're still working through sort of the machinations of that and what it all means and how it will play out. So there will be voices of caution, but I think because of the electoral forces that you described, that probably tips the scale toward doing something in the coming session.
They won't have a chance to vote on this before their primary. Well, they will before their primary. That's the only threat to them. That's the only threat to them in those districts.
Nikki Kelly, when we talked to Senator Mishler and Dr. Brown yesterday, they seemed to rule out one-time spending. Like Mike talked about this at the end of last session, there was a lot of one-time spending, things for this fiscal year, next fiscal year, with all of that, cash that they suddenly found themselves with. We find ourselves with even more cash, and they're ruling out one-time spending in the 2022 session. Do you think that's going to be how it plays out?
Probably, because while there's a definite, there's sort of a little dispute about what counts as opening up the budget, they both agree that any appropriation is opening up the budget. They don't agree with whether House Republicans and Dr. Brown said, if we cut taxes, that's just decreasing revenue. That's not opening up the budget. But Senator Mishler had a different view on that. So they could do both. Meanwhile, Democrats out there are like, hey, why aren't we doing some one-time investments or even long-term investments? One example is, and Anne mentioned early childhood, we still don't have a fully funded pre-K program. And in this situation we're in right now with a lot of childcare issues, that could be an example of one way to get at helping the economy too.
Yeah. All right. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, which I suppose we should put to state lawmakers, should state lawmakers focus big revenue increases on cutting taxes or spending on government programs? A, cutting taxes, or B, spending on those programs like Democrats are pushing for. Last week's question, should the state reduce the amount of local income tax revenue it keeps in reserve in case of economic downturns? Just 53% of you say yes, 47% say no, let's be prudent. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Lawmakers this week took hours of testimony, again, on a bill that would weaken employer vaccination requirements. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports most were unhappy it doesn't ban company mandates, while business groups say it goes too far in regulating employers.
House Bill 1001 would allow employers to require vaccinations, but force them to make exceptions for people who recovered from COVID-19 in the last 6 months, along with standard medical exemptions. It also allows employees to opt out for religious reasons with no further inquiry from businesses. Many citizens who testified said that if it doesn't outright ban vaccine requirements, they don't want it. On the other side, Kevin Brenninger from the Indiana Chamber of Commerce says it prevents businesses from protecting their workers.
Employers should be able to establish what their working conditions are and their work rules, including vaccination mandates.
Lawmakers don't plan to vote on the legislation now, but have promised to revise and advance it in January.
Mike O'Brien, a lot of times when we talk about a debate at the State House, and both sides of that debate are a little unhappy with a bill, it means the bill is probably in a good spot in terms of compromise. Is that, though, the case with this bill?
I don't think anyone's happy with any of this. I will say that the way this bill was crafted reflected very closely with the Ball State University poll that came out this week, that if you're just paying attention to the debate, you know, there's kind of like three buckets of people. There's people support the employer mandate. That was about 30% in that poll. 40% just wanted employers to encourage their employees or provide some kind of like non-binding incentive to do this. And 28% wanted them out of it completely. The state's really kind of divided in thirds here. And the problem you've got, we deal with employers, you know, I talk to employers all the time, clients and otherwise, that they're really trying to figure out, it's a real challenge for them to figure out and go, okay, what do they actually want to be? If the state's going to have kind of this like set of folks, maybe if it's even allowed to in a federal mandate that's still now hung up in the courts, as we all predicted it would be when it came out a couple months ago. Employees and employers are really kind of left in a lurch here. So I think what the House Republicans are trying to do here is give some flexibility to employers and employees and try to balance that out. That seems to be where the vast majority of Hoosiers are landed on this.
And Delaney, how much is we just talked about this a little bit in the last topic. With this one, though, particularly from House Republicans, the sort of, not just the push we're seeing from them, but the speed with which they want to do this, how much are the worry that they have about primaries playing into what's going on behind the scenes?
That's exactly what's playing in here. I mean, the subject of these hearings is even all wrong. I mean, we ought to be having hearings on how to reduce the number of people killed daily by this virus, or how to help the hospital workers who are overwhelmed and the beds that are completely full in these hospitals. Instead, we're doing this nonsense, and we're doing this nonsense because of the Republican primaries, because of the right-wing part of their party that thinks they have the right to infect everybody, and nobody should interfere with that. And it's wasting time and energy, which could more properly be put into trying to save lives. We're losing 24 people a day. Bloomington Hospital just opened, just opened. It's not only completely full, they're repositioning beds in areas they're not, weren't expecting to have beds. And all because of this reaction from the right wing of the Republican Party. And it just is, it's, the dynamic of this is completely wrong, and it is counterproductive to keeping Hoosiers safe. But this isn't the first time the legislature's weighed in against employers and their rights to enforce the workplace. Remember, they did it with guns. They said you can bring your gun into the parking lot of an employer's place of business. I mean, next thing they'll say you can't test for drugs in the workplace. I mean, they ought to just stay out of that the same way they ought to stay out of education.
I think that's a Democratic Party line, not ours. But look, I think if this is just going to be characterized.
Excuse me?
If you believe the polling out of Ball State this week, which I think it like feels right in my gut, this isn't a right-wing Republican argument, unless 70% of the right-wing, 70% of the state is a member of the right-wing Republican Party, in which case I don't want to hear another conversation about redistricting.
All right, yeah, Nikki, well, Nikki, hold on. Okay, okay. Nikki, Nikki, I want to ask you, we saw Kroger this week announce that it's going to be charging its unvaccinated employees more for health care. It's going to be cutting some of their sick time that they were allowed for COVID-19 if they're unvaccinated. They don't have a vaccine mandate, I don't believe. But is that the next thing that lawmakers take aim at after this?
Well, I mean, and some of the people who testified on the bill were already going there. They want some sort of, they want unvaccinated to be a protected class. Numerous people testified of that, saying they shouldn't be able to be discriminated against for not getting the vaccine. So I don't think lawmakers will go there. I almost wonder if Republicans are regretting the decision to jump into this, because even conservatives who would normally support them, man, the vitriol that was going at Republicans was pretty amazing, because this bill, in essence, helps what those people want. But because it doesn't go 100% their way, wow, compromise is not in their vocabulary.
John Schwanes, an argument I hear a lot, we heard it from Mike Braun, in fact, last week, is that opposed what House Republicans are doing here is the slippery slope argument. Well, if you're stopping businesses from doing this now, what are you going to stop them from doing next? And alluded to that in a minute ago. I don't usually like or buy the slippery slope argument, but is there a point to that here?
Well, certainly that's what a lot of large business owners would say. That's certainly what the state chamber has indicated. And I think you're right. It would be hard to argue against that because this is a state where traditionally, if you look at the legislative record, you have lawmakers who, for the most part, have been very reluctant to wade into the business affairs, as they perceive it, of the state's employers. And this does wade into the business affairs of the state's largest employers. And to your point, I'm not sure the next time something comes up that is perceived to be of great importance to a very powerful faction of the party, maybe it's more than a faction, a big chunk
it's
of the party.
Well,
then, in fact, it would be hard to argue that precedent doesn't suggest that we could do it again as a state.
All right. Well, a group of Republican senators from Marion County unveiled a package of bills this week that seeks to address what they view as a worrying trend of violent crimes. The number of total violent crimes in Marion County has gone down each of the last 4 years. The measures include greater cooperation between law enforcement agencies in downtown Indianapolis, a pilot program to target money towards so-called violent crime hotspots, and greater oversight of electronic monitoring. Senator Mike Young says the bills target those charged with the state's list of 21 violent crimes, which includes battery, kidnapping, rape, and burglary.
We know the odds are if you're a serious violent felon, you're more likely to be the one that killed somebody.
Young's measure would make it harder for people charged with violent crimes to be released on bail. That includes making them pay the full minimum bail amount in cash. He insists that won't unfairly punish low-income Hoosiers.
There's not a lot of millionaires I know that are going around killing citizens of Indianapolis today.
The measures will likely get a hearing in the Senate in early January. John Schwanes, are these sorts of bills the answers to the problems Republican senators are talking about?
I'm not sure anyone sadly knows the answers to dealing with the kinds of crime spikes, violent crime spikes we've seen. You know, a lot of these types of measures have been tried here, have been tried elsewhere, with varying degrees of success. I think, sadly, the crime issue is bigger than any set of bills, short of legislation that would somehow suspend habeas corpus and just take half, you know, I mean, anybody who's suspected of a crime, you go and put them behind bars and throw away the key. And I hope I'm not giving any lawmakers ideas for future bills they might want to introduce. But I mean, as long as you stay within the restrictions placed on us, thankfully, by the Constitution, and you look at the financial realities of large-scale incarceration, which, you know, is not sustainable, we know the problem, and it's easy to define the problem. Coming up with that answer and the solution is certainly a lot tougher, but it's not surprising that lawmakers faced with this kind of concern in their home districts would look for some sort of answers to help combat the problem.
Mike O'Brien, there are a lot of people in Indiana jails who are already locked up awaiting trial. In fact, in a lot of jails, it's the majority of people. A significant percentage of people in this state who end up convicted of crimes actually ended up serving more time awaiting trial behind bars than they end up getting for their sentence for that crime. Are these bills really going to help the justice problem we have in Indiana?
I think in some cases, it hopefully will get ahead of it. I mean, Mike Kreider's bill for, well, one, I think it's instructive and important to note that of the Senate bills 1 through 10 and House bills 1001 through 1009 are the caucus priorities. Five of the top 10 Senate Republican bills are focused on crime in Marion County. So that tells you, and that's the entire caucus statewide, so that tells you that, one, it's good that there's a recognition that a safe Indianapolis is good for the entire state. So you have an entire caucus taking this on as their legislative priorities for 2022. I think the bail question is a complicated one, but there are bills in here that are trying to, for example, Kyle Walker's legislation to try to tighten up electronic monitoring so that you don't have people sitting in jail awaiting trial. Mike Kreider's legislation to try to focus more state resources in parts of the city that are high crime, so overtime can be subsidized and so additional dollars can be spent here. So I think there are really good kind of common sense ways for this. Jack Sandlin's bill to coordinate state and local resources and state and local law enforcement, especially in Marion County, where a lot of times you have the state police and IMPD and the sheriff working hand in hand. There's a lot of common sense provisions and proposals out there.
And Delaney, I'm going to guess you have a problem with some of these bills, but to Mike's point, are some of these smart solutions that may even end up with Democratic support?
There are a couple in there that could have Democratic support, yes, because some of them are smart, the electronic monitoring, for example. But having said that, as you pointed out, violent crime is down. Okay, the problem is murder. And murders, in large part, are committed with guns. And what do the Republican Party stand for? Everybody needs at least one gun, maybe two or three. They're just going to start issuing them in the cradle. They want them out there so much. You don't even want to license them. That's the problem. We have more guns in this country than we have people. And when you have them in the hands of people who are volatile or get angry, you get shootings. And when you get shootings, the murder rate goes up. And that's what we need to deal with. The violent crime itself is going, the burglaries and the other things we're talking about are decreasing. It's the murder rate that has people concerned. And to do that, you'd have to deal with guns. You have to have a way of keeping guns out of the hands of felons and doing background checks and making sure they can't buy them illegally. That's what you have to do.
Maybe process red flag complaints. I mean, for filing
red flag complaints are okay. They're okay.
There was a report this week that there were 14 deaths that you could draw a straight line from the red flag not being filed.
Michael, they're for a small percentage of them, and the legislation needs to be tightened up because it doesn't work effectively. Okay, that's the problem.
That's not the reason to ignore it entirely, which is what the Marion
County. Nobody's ignoring it entirely, okay?
All right. State officials announced this week that all 17 regional proposals were awarded funds under the state's new $500 million Ready Grant program that aims to improve quality of life and attract and retain workers. The original plan had been to award 10 regions $50 million each. Instead, every region received awards ranging from $5 to $50 million. The state initiative aims to encourage public-private partnerships that will develop communities with quality of life in mind. Governor Eric Holcomb says READY will have long-term impacts.
There were some unprecedented relationships that were built throughout this process, and that is going to serve us well, not just over the course of the next year, 2-3 years, but really over the course of the next decade.
Holcomb says he's hoping to continue the program with additional funding in the future. Nikki Kelly, is there hope of additional funding in the future?
I would say so. Maybe not in the $500 million range, but, you know, they could probably, you know, the way they're leveraging the dollars, you could do $100 or $200 million and still do a lot. And I think that's part of what is pushing Holcomb to kind of stay on the sidelines on this tax cut so far, because anything they cut now kind of takes away the flexibility in the next budget for a ready to, or for instance, some public health investments that he really wants to make next year based on a public health commission that he has meeting now.
Mike O'Brien, very quickly here, we've seen regional cities before, hope to get more funding, never did. Now we have ready. Is this the one that might be more sustainable in the future?
I hope so. And I think the success of these projects and the 17 communities or the partnerships that were awarded are going to, as long as they're successful, it should sort of continue for a long time. We saw really creative partnerships all across the state through counties and towns and others to come together. So it's pretty exciting that they were able to fund them all.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, please get vaccinated if you can, especially right now. And join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.